This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. Today's guest is Steve Wright, an 11-year NFL veteran who also played for 1 year in the USFL. Steve played offensive tackle for most of his career, but he also spent some time at guard and playing on special teams. Steve played for the Dallas Cowboys, the Baltimore Colts, the Indianapolis Colts, the Oakland Invaders, and the Los Angeles Raiders. After retiring from professional football, Steve became an entrepreneur and founded Cloudburst and another company. Was that Mist and Cool?
It was all part of the Cloudburst. I'll tell all about it.
All right. So we're going to talk a little about that. And we're also going to discuss his being a contestant on Survivor, as well as his newly released book titled Aggressively Human. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, thank you, Mark. Thanks a lot for having me. I look forward to chatting and sharing some fun stories.
Yes. Okay. So before we talk about your career as a professional football player, I wanted to ask you about your misting company. What got you into that endeavor?
It was 2 months before the season started. I knew all of our preseason games and our games are going to be held in the Coliseum. And early part of the year, you know, August, early September, it's bloody hot there. It's roughly 80 degrees and there's not a breath of air stirring. I was over in Palm Springs at a Mexican restaurant and mist was blowing above the restaurant onto the patrons to keep them cool. And fans were blowing and it was probably 30 degrees cooler sitting at your table than just out on the sidewalk. I talked to the manager how to do this. I brought it back, asked Coach Art Shell if I could try it. And after about my third sales pitch to him, he said, sure, go ahead and set the stuff up. But if it pisses anybody off, we're going to tear it down. I said, I'll tear it down with you. And so I got out there about 4 or 5 hours before the game started with a couple of guys, and we set up the very first mist cooling, oscillating fan equipment in the NFL. And it was a huge hit. In the stands were some people from Hollywood Park, the racetrack that was out here in Los Angeles, that they ended up cleaning that out to put the SoFi Stadium in. And so I ended up going out to this Hollywood Park and set up these misting systems for the horses to keep the air cooled off. They'd right. come on for 10 minutes every hour. It would propel the flying insects, freshen the air. They didn't have to go in with hoses and hose the dirt down to keep the dirt from kicking up in the dust. So it was just a huge hit, and just kind of one thing started to fall into another. And this was 3 years before I retired. So in the preceding off seasons, I was setting them up at restaurants and hotels and homes and barns and everything else. And then the team was looking to move to Oakland. So I retired in 94. When they moved back up there, I incorporated my company Cloudburst, and it just exploded from there. I had the high-pressure misting fans that you see cooling the sidelines. I got those into Major League Baseball. 2 years later, in 96, it's another great story in my book. I ended up winning the contract to cool the 96 Summer Olympics over the top of Raytheon and GE. And I had them on aircraft carriers, had them at NASA, cooling off areas there, Burlington Northern. Every place that was hot, that couldn't have air conditioning, I had my equipment. I wasn't doing a lot of marketing. I was just saying yes, my partner and I. Right. And then I had a low pressure system that you just screw into the faucet outside the house and you tack them up along the wall and then along the gutter. and it just keeps the patio cool, or the dog pen, or your little horse pen, or whatever it is. It just, I was in probably 1,500 Home Depots, Lowe's and Costco's and Target's, and it just, it was a beast that just took off. My partner still has it. I sold out in, I don't know, 2000, 2001, something like that. Great run, fun idea. I didn't come up with anything new. It'd been cooling chickens off since the 20s. I just saw a great idea and found other applications for it. Right. So that's why I try to tell every entrepreneur is, I don't know, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just find new applications is, it was the easy way. And it was at the beginning of the internet. So that helped a lot as well.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a great story. And these are still available in Home Depot and Lowe's.
They are. I think he has them around some places. To be honest with you, I don't know where they are anymore. And there's obviously competition. A couple of years into doing this, we had competition on the sidelines, in football. And I got them into baseball and some other sports, soccer, and just other companies coming in and competing and lowering their prices. And so we got away from the NFL, because the NFL wanted you to pay to be on the sidelines. So done with that. Yeah. And, you know, put them in smelting plants and plastic extruder plants and a lot of factories around the country. And we opened up probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 distributors around the world that were moving the product as well.
Wow. Tremendous. Great story. Okay, so next I wanted to ask you about being a contestant on Survivor. I never watched the show, and I don't really know much about it. So for those of us who aren't familiar with it, tell us a little bit about it and what motivated you to take part in that.
I was the same as you, Mark. I had never seen the show. I go down once a year to see my old teammate, Howie Long, on the Fox Studio set. In LA. So I'm down there and ended up chatting for probably 3 hours in the green room with a lady who's the lead casting director, who was the lead casting director at the time. And after hanging out, she asked me if I'd ever been on a reality TV show. No. do you have any desire to? Not really. She goes, well, I'm the lead casting director for Amazing Race and for Survivor. Would you like to try out? And I had never seen the show before, but I said, well, which one should I? She said, try Survivor. And I said, okay. And that's part of my theme in my book is when an opportunity opens up and the door cracks for young people or anybody else, just charge through it. It might not work out. You might run into a wall, but at least you're not going to walk away and say, coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, should I have done that? Or I'll call you tomorrow. I would have never had another chance to reach out to this woman, and she's probably busy as crazy, you know. So I just said yes, not knowing what I was getting myself into. And then about a month and a half later, I landed in Nicaragua for – I was in the show. It's 39 days. I lasted 31 days. And it was an experience of a lifetime. The show is 100% real. It was excruciatingly draining, raining on us every night, all night. I lost 33 pounds in 31 days.
Wow.
It was an experience of a lifetime. They asked me to come back, and I couldn't. I ended up getting back to Los Angeles, and before I went to see my parents after the show, my front tooth was hurting. And so I went and saw my dentist and took an x-ray and said, we got to pull that tooth right now. He goes, you have more bacteria in there than I've ever seen in my life. He pulled the tooth out, and just the most god-awful odor. He said, this kills people in third world countries.
Oh, man.
So I took my front tooth out and lost 31 pounds. And so that was one and done for me.
Wow. That sounds brutal.
But I'm actually not allowed to talk about it too much, just under contract for life.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was a great experience. It was miserable. I still retain a few friends from that time because you're joined at the hips. You're sleeping together. You do everything together. You just hang out all the time. It's a brutal experience, but it was one that I'm super happy I said yes to.
So kind of like football, you develop a bond with
people.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. One more question that's not about football. I learned from reading on Wikipedia that you were an All-American in track and field. And I have quite a few friends and people I've trained with over the years who threw discus, shot put, hammer. So my question is, did you get a lot of enjoyment from that? And how much do you think it may have helped you to become a better football player?
It was in high school. It was a high school All-American, shot put and discus, like you were just saying. It's a lonely sport. You're not over with all the rest of the people on the track. You're over in a far corner slinging a disc out into a field, and so it's a lonely position. But I really enjoyed it. You know, if I wasn't spinning around and throwing the shot or discus, I was in lifting or doing some running or doing some kind of calisthenic or something. So it all helped. You know, when you're in high school and you're developing and I had no idea that I would become an All-American. I was just having fun at the time. And that's another thing I really try to stress in my book is just staying present and enjoy what you're doing. And if you don't enjoy what you're doing, find something else that you do enjoy. And I did really love competing basically with myself of throwing it farther each time. You know, we had some meets and everything, and I think I won second in shot put and discus in the state meet. It was, learning how to move your body quickly and explode. So, back to what you're saying. Yeah, I'm sure it helped in one way or another, just like my basketball in high school did, or my hockey. And
Right. So for young people that are still in high school, you would recommend, do a variety of sports.
And that's back. We were fortunate to be able to play, Mark, you and I, at our age, we were able to, and they encouraged it to play different sports. Now they just box them in, from seventh grade on. If you're wearing football gear in seventh grade, you're a football player. You don't get to go try basketball in ninth grade or 10th grade or baseball or something else, which is, to me, it's just an absolute crime and a shame that they put these kids in a box. So, they're either going to love it or they're going to hate it by the time they're in high school or don't even want to think about it in college. They're so worn out. The parents are getting them special coaches, we're going to wait. You can't go to be in the baseball. You can't go to the baseball season because that's when we're doing weightlifting. And if you're not in weightlifting, then you're not going to be able to play football next year because you weren't in the weightlifting group or you weren't a part of the traveling team in baseball. So, you're going to miss out on that. It's a huge bummer. And I write about that as well.
Right. No, I definitely agree with you. Okay. So my first question about football is how much the game has changed since your playing days. And going back to the 1970s and 1980s, obviously the contact and the hitting were a lot more intense at that time. And now they've removed a lot of that from the game. And I read a little bit about how you think they need to do a better job with improving the helmets and the equipment so we can bring back some of those big hits that fans want to see.
Yep. Yeah, it's the game is. I don't really watch football anymore. Last year I watched three games. I watched the two championship games, the NFC and the AFC championship game, and I watched the Super Bowl. And they were all three were just awesome. But all the other games, you know, for one, it's just, it kills me with the commercials. You know, out of a 3 hour and 15 minute television production of a football game, there's only 11 minutes of action. So it's, you know, it can almost put you to sleep. And then too, they just, they want all these guys bigger, stronger, faster, but yet they put a leash on them that they can't unleash that on players. No player wants to hurt another player, but they definitely want to hit hard, and they want to hit them hard enough to separate the ball from them. Probably 10 years ago, it was driving me so crazy. I put together a PowerPoint on how to make the game safer, but more violent. Just get rid of a lot of the penalties, equip the guys with available equipment or easily manufactured equipment. The simple thing of just wearing knee braces. I couldn't imagine being an owner of a team and paying you $10 million as an offensive lineman or $5 million as an offensive lineman to go out on the field with your pants rolled up and not wearing a knee brace. And there's nine other 300-pound plus guys falling and getting shoved and tripped and everything else. And a knee goes out and it's like, oh, how did that happen? The poor guy. Nah, dumb as hell to me. And so if I was an owner, I just wouldn't let the guy go on the field unless he had, you know, it's like sending your you got a race car team, you know, the Andretti's, and you send the guy out there and, hey, you don't have to wear your seatbelt. Leave your helmet here. It's like, equip these guys. And then, you know, knee braces. And I was thinking of different ways to do something with the helmet, to hook it to your shoulder pad so it doesn't have quite as much snap, but still able to swivel. And there's ways to figure that out. There's nothing out there right now, but there's, you know, it doesn't take too smart of a mind, a couple of engineers, to work on a safer way to attach the helmet to the shoulder pads so that the shoulder pads take a lot of the blow too. When the head gets snapped, it's all part of this. It's not just the neck taking the, you know, a quick whiplash and moving the brain in there. But there's a lot of things they can do. And it's a bummer that it's not being done. Just more penalties and slowing the game down. But, you know, they've got a recipe to where the audience keeps climbing. It's by far the most popular sport to watch, and except for in this household.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they're catering more to the younger generation and guys that are our age. I'm only a couple of years younger than you. I think I stopped watching it almost 20 years ago. I just don't find it at all interesting. It took away all the hitting. It's just nothing but penalties, and I have no interest. I find it boring. And I go back to, if I want to watch football, I'll put on YouTube, and you can get a lot of those old games from the 70s and 80s. And I get a lot more enjoyment out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, back there, we took a real beating. And I wish we would have had some of the equipment they've got today, but they haven't really improved the equipment at all and part of this PowerPoint, I've got showing that the equipment hasn't changed from the 70s, a picture of a guy playing in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, I think 2010 and 20. And it's all the helmet, the shoulder pad, the thigh pad, the, you know, hip pads. And it's just nothing has been added. It's sure they've changed the plastic and the different, you know, moldings in the helmet, but the head's still snapping around, and you know, guys are rolling their pants legs up, and it's just like, it's just, it's not my cup of tea anymore, but I did enjoy watching the Super Bowl and the two championship games.
Well, you must be very grateful that you got to play during the time that you did I never played beyond high school, but you know, that was back in the 70s, and I'm so glad that I grew up in the 70s, because
I agree with you, Mark.
So much more enjoyable.
Yeah, super happy that I got to play at that time, and I never had a dream of playing in college, and all of a sudden I started getting scholarship offers, and And then about my junior year, I started receiving letters from various NFL teams, and it just blew me away. My philosophy, I'm going back to my University of Northern Iowa. I'm going back to their homecoming this year for the first time in pretty much, I think I went back a couple years after I left, but I'm going to go back and see a game. And yeah, I just was enjoying playing football at the University of Northern Iowa. It was a dome stadium, the Panthers. Uh-huh. And then these letters rolled in, and all of a sudden I had an opportunity, and they signed 120. The Dallas Cowboys signed 120 free agents, and just three of us made it, and I was fortunate to be one of them. You know, another thing I talk about in my book is just staying very present.
That's amazing.
To this practice to this day. Pardon me?
Right.
Yeah.
120 free agents, and they usually only take maybe one out of that 120. So
Yeah, and I don't know what they take now as free agents, but they don't take as many as they used to.
Right. Do you remember who the other two guys were that made
it? Sure, yeah. Everson Walls, who ended up getting beat by Dwight Clark in the catch in the NFC Championship game. That was my rookie year. He and I and the other defensive back, Michael Downs, we were all headed to the Super Bowl our rookie year, and Dwight Clark caught the ball right over the top of Everson. I think he's number 24. But it was quite an experience.
Okay, thanks for sharing that. So you were involved in one of the most historic plays in the NFL history. I'm talking about the Tony Dorsett 99-yard touchdown run on Monday Night Football. So Kirk Peterson was normally the starting right guard, but you were taking his place on that play. I was just watching a replay of that on Saturday, and wanted to talk a little X's and O's. So it looks like the guy you were blocking, guy's name was Doug Martin, defensive end for the Vikings. Yep. It looks like he tried to shoot the gap on your right side, and you got just enough of a block on him to keep him away from Dorsett. Because if you look at the film, you can see him reaching with his right arm to try and grab Dorsett. And if you didn't get that block on him, maybe we would have never seen that 99-yard run.
Yes, the pressure was on. I was the youngest one in the huddle. I was on the kickoff return team to start the third quarter in Minneapolis, where I grew up, and I had 35 tickets, and they were all in that end zone, about three rows up. We're in the huddle. I'm giving them thumbs up to my mom and dad and all my buddies, and they called the play over the center between the two guards and I was like, holy cow. The pressure was on the young guy. And then we also, too, one of our guys was missing, so we only had 10 guys in the huddle. But a fun part of that, and I write about it in my book, is 4 years earlier, I was watching the NFC Championship game with the Dallas Cowboys in Minneapolis. We're playing at the Met, and I'm in the stands in 10th grade watching this when Drew Pearson caught the Hail Mary. Coined the Hail Mary, and it was freezing outside, and he runs in for a touchdown. So now fast forward 4 years later, I'm standing in the huddle with him at 21 years old, and high-fiving and in there with Tony Dorsett and Tony Thrillhill and all these other guys. It was just like you couldn't have dreamed of a better dream for a young football player. Yeah, and got him loose for the longest run. And I came out after that play. I was in for one play, and it was the longest run in NFL history. And yeah, it was just amazing.
There was some tremendous blocking on that play too. Herb Scott really blasted the middle linebacker, and who was the other
Rafferty?
Rafferty. He was the center, right?
Yep, and I think Cooper was next to me.
Right. Cooper, I think Pat Donovan was in there. So there was some really good blocking. So.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, most likely Tom Rafferty and all the regulars, except for Kurt Peterson because he couldn't put his shoe on.
Oh, is that what happened?
He was on the kickoff return team, and his shoe came off, and he was scrambling with it, trying to get it back on. He just didn't have the time to do it, so my offensive line coach pushed me out there. And what is really pretty cool, and I'm really proud of, is the other rookies that year were the number one draft pick and the number three draft pick. We're both offensive linemen, and I got the call as a free agent to go in, and these guys were both centers and guards, and they put me in there.
Wow.
So they thought something of me, and it was amazing experience that, you know, I'll cherish forever.
That's right. That's tremendous. People always remember that play. So, you said you were in the stands for that, the famous Hail Mary pass to Drew Pearson. So were you living in Minnesota at that time?
That's where I grew. I grew up in Minnesota.
I grew up
in Minneapolis. Yeah.
Okay.
Out in the lakes, out in the suburb, on the west side, in Wayzata, Minnetonka, and then that's kind of what got me to school down in Cedar Falls, Iowa. It's 4 hours south. All my relatives, my father's parents and brother and his family. And so I had opportunities to go farther outside of different states. And I just chose University of Northern Iowa. It was a good marketing school, good business school. They had a dome stadium, the second one in the country.
Right.
I think Northern Arizona had the first one. And so it's, I'm really looking forward to going back there for homecoming this year.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's a question. All your years of playing, 12 years of playing professional football, who would you rank as some of the very best defensive players that you had to block against?
I'd put probably Howie Long up there first. I had to practice against him every day, and so he sharpened my skills and improved my abilities big time. He might kick my ass in practice, but it made me a better player to move quick. There's no one in the league that was faster off the ball than Howie. But then I played in the Meadowlands against Lawrence Taylor,
right,
over on the left side. Had a great game. Have some funny stories about that. Leading up to it, Lawrence yelling at me before the game started, trying to intimidate me. But played against Reggie White, the pastor. What was his nickname? Reggie White, the minister of defense.
Yes.
Played against Jack Youngblood, Neil Smith, Bruce Smith with Buffalo. Yeah, I had my handful every week. It was the early part of my career with Dallas. When I would get thrown into games, it might be a mediocre player, but as I got in to be a starter in the early 90s, late 89, it was just every week was a Pro Bowler.
Right. So
you had to bring your lunchbox. It was going to be a long afternoon, as Mike Dicker would always tell me.
Oh yeah. So your 2 years with the Cowboys, did you have to go up against Randy White much in practice?
Randy, I got a great story about that as well in my book. He and Harvey Martin. Yeah,
right.
And then I got traded to the Baltimore Colts, and then we came back that year and played in Dallas, and I played against Harvey Martin was lined up over me, or actually Too Tall was lined up over me, and Randy was lined up over the guard, and it was now we're on opposite sides, and he was a beast, and I ended up having one of the best hits I've ever had in my young career. I just sent him flying. He was coming over around on a stunt, and I just got in perfect position on him. and just not threw him on his back. And I couldn't leave Will enough alone. I had to, point my finger at him. Payback's come, and he got me two quarters later. We were kicking an extra point. He lined up over me. He jumped over to line up in front of me. And at the snap of the ball, he didn't even try to rush. He just stood up and punted me in the ribs as hard as he could, because we'd turn sideways and lock our head on the guy's hip on the inside. And he kicked every breath of air out of me. And he got the last laugh in the point. But, yeah, he was a scary human being.
Well, you had to be pretty good to go up against those guys for 12 years.
You gotta fight hard. It's for real. And if you don't fight hard, you don't last long.
That's right. What was it? it was a funny guy, funny character, Coach Jerry Glanville. Jerry Glanville. He said, "NFL stands for not for long. If you don't produce,
you gotta play hurt. You gotta, there's no excuses. You're only as good as your last play. So
that's right.
Keep your ego in check, because as Mike Dickett told me, everybody, and when I was there as a rookie with 120 of us, he said, everybody here has got the physical tools. This is what's going to separate you. You're going to get your ass kicked today. Deal with it, figure it out, and dish out more than you're receiving, but you're going to get your ass kicked. It's, they're all getting paid. So, bring your lunchbox. It's going to be a fight.
Oh yeah. And, I wanted to ask you, you hear about it a lot from coaches, and especially, coaches that going to announce, like John Madden would mention it all the time, and how important, you mentioned it, how important is it to the speed off the ball? I would imagine, one of the most important things is to get speed off the snap, because if whoever makes contact first is going to have an advantage. Right.
Yeah, and that's where Howie helped me. He leaps out of his stance. He doesn't run out of his stance. He just explodes. He's down and cocked, and just before the center is squeezing the ball, they're watching the center's hands, and he just makes a little bit of a movement. He's in your face, so you learn to get set up quick and get in the right body position. And yeah, you're right, Mark. It's coming off the ball too for run plays. It's it just becomes a head game. You're leaning one way and you're going to go another just to kind of, do a little fake is all you have time for. Speed and obvious strength, explosion. And we work on all that, in the off season. And
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, of all the teams that you played on, I know the 1981 Cowboys had a really good team, almost made it to the Super Bowl. But you also played on some Raiders teams that came close to reaching the Super Bowl. What do you think was maybe, what would you say was maybe the best team that you played on for one particular season?
The 81 Cowboys, with all the talent they had and the great coaching they had and the history. And but I was also too a young guy, and I was, I thought everything was amazing. But the 91 Raiders were great too. I think it was 91 when we went to Buffalo, and we were a game away from going to the Super Bowl, and we played in Buffalo, and it was 30 below zero. And we got our ass handed to us. I think it was something like 51-3.
So,
we just imploded, where the Dallas Cowboys, we lost on a very lucky catch and scrambled by Montana. We were a solid team that should have won that. We definitely outplayed the Niners, but with luck on their side, they took it.
Right. And who was the offensive line coach? Was a guy named Jim Myers? Was that
correct? Yes.
Right. So he was pretty tough on you.
Yeah,
he was tough on everything.
Yeah, he was always yelling at me as a rookie, and I got a story about that as well. And Dick threw his arm around me as a rookie, trying to make the team, and took me for what I called a wisdom walk, and he'd say, you know, Coach Myers, he's driving you crazy, isn't he? You can be able to handle it. Just, you know, hang in there. But Steve, always remember, start worrying if he stops yelling at you.
Right.
And I was like, wow, that was something I hadn't thought about. So he's yelling at me because he cared. He knew that there was more in me than I was giving, even though I thought I was giving it all. He always had a saying that he liked to put a whip to the player, and you know, they were either going to be like a mule and sit down, or they were going to be a racehorse and they were going to take off, and he was going to figure that out.
Right. So,
you know, chew my ass out, and he knows I'm trying as hard as I can, but he knew that there was a little bit more in me.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So, I wanted to ask you one final question about your, You mentioned that you like to try to give back a lot. Do you have any particular charities that you're involved with?
I just put all my time and effort. My wife and I both do put all our time and effort when we're going to do something like this into our global giving. It's global, B-A-L-L. And so we collect used sports balls. Anything sports. I've collected surfboards and sent them to the Philippines. We're in probably 30 different countries. We've serviced and brought equipment, baseball hats, cricket sticks, soccer balls, bowling nets, anything that people have in their garage or colleges or high schools that want to get rid of maybe they're changing the color of their jerseys, you know, girls basketball outfits, and we package those all up and send them out. And we've serviced probably a million people over 10 years now. It started by a friend of ours, Mark Rollison, who lives in Milwaukee, and the headquarters for Global Giving is up there. But anybody looking that's got extra sports equipment, love to have it, reach out to globalgiving.org.
Okay.
And then my book is everything about me, and everything Mark and I have been talking about is at writeauthor.com.
Writeauthor.com.
Yeah.
Is that also available on Amazon?
It's on Amazon, and there's a hot link in the website to click you over to it. But there's also just a lot of great action shots, you know, Bo and I, or Howie and I, or...
Right.
A lot of football shots, and all my blogs that I was doing over the last year are in there as well. Of, you know, 2-minute read of, you know, an interesting story or a fun or a crazy story of partying or something along the way.
Right.
Yeah.
And the title is Aggressively Human.
Aggressively Human.
There it is. Aggressively Human.
Yeah, just out working right now. I'm doing a lot of signings at Barnes & Nobles and spending a lot of time. So if anybody's interested in having the book and not wanting to go to Amazon, they can DM me. All my social media sites are in the website, writeauthor.com. DM me, and I got a ton of books here, hard and soft cover, and I'll send you out a copy personalized to you.
Excellent. All right. Well, it was great having you on.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for your time.
Great being here. Great being a part of it. Thanks for inviting me on.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
All right.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care. Thank you.
Bye. God bless.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.